Hi, welcome back to Hogcast, the official podcast of the 442nd Fighter Wing. I'm Bob Jennings, the Superintendent of Public Affairs, and I'm sitting here with Colonel Mike Rio Leonis, the Wing Commander. Our guests today are Captain Jacob Bango Thompson Stanley and Major Jeremy Stain Grinnell. We've just finished the June UTA, and after last month, sir, it almost felt like a breather.
Yeah, I agree. It was kind of, I'll call it a standard UTA, and a lot of good stuff happened, that's for sure. Let's talk about some information you came to me with about our history. Obviously, our wing goes way back. It goes back to when we were an airlift wing and activated during World War II and supported the D-Day invasion. And today, we're filming on the 6th of June.
Yes, sir.
And what is significant about the 6th of June?
So today is actually the 80th anniversary of D-Day, June 6th, 1944. And we were there, not we, obviously, but the 442nd Troop Carrier Group, U.S. Army Air Corps, was there, flying C-47 commandos across the English Channel, and we were dropping 82nd Airborne paratroopers.
Awesome. And obviously a historic unit to support, and you know what, we go way back in history. In fact, one of our A-10s still has Normandy stripes on it, which are on the wings, black and white stripes that identified that these were Allied aircraft and don't shoot us down. So we hold that history. But I think you actually found some good news, some potential good news about what some of the members of the former members of the 442nd.
So yeah, so I've been talking to Bill Huntington, who is a retired member of the wing, and he was the superintendent of public affairs, I believe. He was in the office some years ago, and since then, he's kept up with the history, and he's done a lot of digging, done a lot of research into it, and he's told me that on D-Day, the 442nd lost 3 aircraft and 5 members. 3 of those members are still missing, but some good news is that the Defense PIO-MIA Accounting Agency thinks they may have found them.
Well, that's an interesting point out, because that agency actually came on to the Whiteman Air Force Base just a couple months ago, maybe 6 months ago, and they actually came to our conference room. The Bomb Wing Commander hosted them. They brought an SES, which is a senior executive that runs that organization, and she just shows up, and they brought her over to our wing for only reason to have a bigger conference room, and she talked about her efforts, and now that same organization might have found missing 442nd fighter or 442nd members. That's phenomenal.
Right. So they're right now digging up some poor farmer's field in France, excavating it very carefully. They found what appear to be aircraft pieces of headsets for communication, and they may have found human remains as well. So they're going to transfer those back over to the United States, and they're going to analyze them over the next 18 months or so to try to figure out if those are our 3 missing airmen and return those remains to the families.
Yeah, that's an amazing, and the synergy that group actually came to our base and sat in our conference room not too long ago is phenomenal. And apparently the evidence that led them to the field is that the airplane was noted at pulling away from villages and actually crashed in a field intentionally.
Correct, yeah. The pilot has been found, and his remains have been interred in a veteran's cemetery. And his nephew has found some evidence that his last act as the pilot was to stop the aircraft from crashing into the village by steering it toward the field.
Phenomenal. And the fact that they're still investigating and looking for remains from World War II is awesome. And that agency is looking in Korea and Vietnam and even some of the smaller skirmishes as well. Because, you know, getting a family's remains back home is super important. So,
great
story for the 80th anniversary of D-Day and our historic wing. So, Bob, what's next?
Well, next up, sir, I think it's Babel time.
It is Babel time. And I think the value of guessing what Babel is, Babel Time's named after, is up to $150, or is it $175?
I thought it was $125.
I think that was last time. We'll have to come up with it. I guess we'll just set it. It's $150, and we'll add from there.
You did promise hints.
I did promise hints. I'm not prepared to give one, but we'll do it. Well, I will give one. So my hint to you today is Davis-Monthan Air Force Base. That's my hint to why this is called Babel Time. Lance Moore actually guessed between the two episodes, and he sent me a biblical reference to the Tower of Babel and what that meant. And I read it, and it has absolutely nothing to do with Babel time. So, Lance, good guess, but no, you do not win the money. $150 are on the table, and today's hint is Davis Moth and Air Force Base. So, let's talk about what happened in this UTA. We had a lot of little things happen. Not little, a lot of things happened, but the UTA wasn't absolutely overwhelming. It was just, I'd call it, again, a standard UTA. The biggest achievement in regards to what's happening in a future combat deployment is all the ACS, the Agile Combat Support Orders are cut. So props out to that whole team, specifically Peyton Hannes, who was TDY for his training, and I was actually processing orders for the members who were deploying. So that, you know, that just shows how awesome the members of our wing are in regards to taking care of people, and Peyton, awesome job. And then Bob, what about Hunger Games? What'd you hear about that?
Well, I heard we won first place, most improved.
Yeah, I would say that's two different things. We were most improved, the most improved by a large margin, and proud for everybody that moved the needle on that. And we won, I think, $25,000 in RPA, which we will distribute and make things even better. So first place on that. We had a retirement. Who retired? We actually had two retirement events.
Yes, sir. Our maintenance group deputy commander, Lieutenant Colonel Gary, retired.
Yep, 5 Bay, and his family was there. It was a nice ceremony, and thanks to Jason Gary for serving for us in about a year and a half, I believe. Did a lot of good work for the maintenance group, and they were sad to see him go. And then Tom Campbell kind of had, we'll call it an under-the-radar event out at the golf club, and he retired as well. And did you go to that one, Bob?
I did not.
Okay, bummer. Nor did I.
Unfortunately, sorry, Tom.
That's the under the radar. Yeah, Tom is obviously going to remain in our wing in the support group. You've got a great civil engineering background, and he's absolutely critical to our infrastructure improvements, specifically Cannon Range. We showed some pictures of the new towers down there, the flank tower and the main tower. Both of those are required to score the pilots' weapons deliveries, and real proud of those new facilities, and Tom has gone down there monthly to make sure the contracts are ongoing. So thanks for Tom. And segue onto that, we're actually going to have an open house down at Cannon Range on the 4th of August. We're going to take some people from the wing. We're going to invite people from the community to go down there and Crunch Sadler, Mike Sadler, former Lieutenant Colonel, former pilot in their wing, is going to run that project. He's done it before, but they've had up to 1,000 people on the range during the open houses of the past. So hopefully we'll have the same turnout, and we're going to bring people from the wing down there. So Bob, you get to go, and
definitely,
hopefully that will be an awesome event. We have some change of commands pending. Lieutenant Colonel Pat Chevalier is going to take over the maintenance group here in August. Colonel Bill McLeod got a job in the Air National Guard, so he is transitioning to the state militia up in South Dakota. And he's going to make that move in July, and Pat Chevalier is going to take over the group in August. So we're looking forward to that.
And I deployed with Colonel Chevalier, then Captain Chevalier, in 2014 in maintenance. Phenomenal maintenance officer. From a personnel background, too. I can't imagine a better person to take over that organization than him.
Yeah, I agree. And he actually was one of our interviewees from when we talked about the E2O program, enlisted officer transition, and again, just another enlisted member of our unit that's going to become a group commander. Phenomenal. And yeah, he did a whole bunch of different jobs before he got commissioned as a maintenance officer. So looking forward to that change of command. And then we have on the 10th of June, we have the 358, the Lobos are swapping out. And Mike Uza Dumas is going to Australia. He's been a commander for 2 years and has done a great job. I remember him from probably when he was a lieutenant way back in the day. And Lieutenant Colonel Strobe Ledvina is going to take over. I'll call him Strobe since I can't pronounce his last name.
Yeah, it took me, what has he been here for, 2 years to put together Uza Dumas?
Uza Dumas, yeah. He's not. He's actually pretty bright. From grad from Purdue.
I obviously am not.
But yeah, there you go. And he's a very cognitive guy, and he's got a great assignment ahead of him in Australia. Non-flying, but I mean, what a great opportunity for him and his family. So we wish him luck, and I appreciated working with him. He was, again, another awesome Lobo
that came through here as a commander. They're coming from Osan, which is kind of funny. The last four commanders did a tour at Osan, and then they come to Missouri. Same thing with Strobe.
Well, he's, there aren't a whole lot of A-10 options left in active duty, huh?
Yeah, there's more than that, so, but I think that's good. So the Strobe was the 25th Fighter Squadron, Pilsung, Director of Operations, before he's going to take over the Fighter Squadron. So that's great news coming up. I had some intel briefs. Those were well attended, and we're going to continue to do that. The 442nd OSS, Operations Support Squadron Intel Shop, put those on, and I saw a whole slew of people going to see what's going on in the world and get something outside of the open source information that you get on the news at a classified level. So I appreciate their efforts on that. Did you attend by any chance?
I did not. I go to the pre-UTA meetings where we have basically the same information.
Yep. Awesome stuff. So no July UTA? So that's kind of been a tradition over the last couple of years. So we have a little extra space for vacations and summer events. And then we come right back into it in August. We talked about the open house down the range. But we're having the enlisted to officer, you know, it's called the Deserving Airman Board for people that have been around for a long time. But bottom line, there's a different name for it. I don't even remember what the new name is.
It's non-EAD Commissioning Board.
No kidding why I can't remember. So bottom line, E2O program, we're going to make this benchmark, and I think we're going to select four officers for that board, and I think we have upwards of 9 to 10 applicants so far. Wow. So packages are due by the end of June, but we're going to be flexible since our timeline this year has not been perfect. Next year, we're going to have a more streamlined program since this is brand new. So looking forward to that. Awesome. What else? What else happened, Bob?
The top three hosted a speed mentoring event at the DFAC, which I'm told went pretty well.
Yep, absolutely. That was a good event. I kind of kicked it off, and you know, mentoring is about building relationships and sharing ideas, and that's the first start. And it was a pretty successful first hack at that. Hopefully, it'll become more popular later on.
And I think the speed mentoring is a really great format because in the reserve, you may work with somebody for 20, 30 years in the same office, but you see them 2 days at a time. So you don't have a lot of time to really get mentoring.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was, I think that program was, I think, Senior Gonzalez and Sergeant Winslow. Those are both from Security Forces, kind of came up with that. And I think we tricked some people to attend because we did it at the DFAC. And they were not there for the speed mentoring, but I mean, we need to advertise it better, perhaps. But I certainly think it was a positive, and anytime you can talk to someone maybe outside your shop that has a different story and a different experiences, you're going to get better. So,
speaking of outside your shop, the DEI committee also had a kickball tournament Saturday afternoon.
I heard that was kind of fun.
I heard it was a lot of fun too. I'm not a kickballer myself. I would have fallen down.
Yeah. I know Colonel Leiter went and some other people from the wing staff went. Again, maybe not attended like we wanted to, but I think that goes back to what we talked about a couple months about our communication CPI event or CI2 event, how we're going to increase our communication across the wing. And one of their countermeasures, you're on that board or yes, that program, is an events calendar, and we'll get these on the events calendar so that people aren't informed the day right, they show up for the UTA.
So going forward, if you have an event that you'd like to get on our main calendar, email it to me or email it to the public affairs org box, 442fw.pa.
Yep, don't keep it a secret. Definitely share it, and I'll help get it to Bob if he didn't get it direct from you.
And since we don't have a July UTA, supervisors, remember to be checking in on your airmen because it is the 101 critical days of summer, and we don't want anybody to get lost.
Yep, I definitely told that to the commanders, but it applies to everybody. Make sure that we don't have 2 months of ignoring our airmen, especially during the summer days when something can happen. There's a lot of people getting out on motorcycles, watercraft, doing things outside, and that's obviously more hazardous, so. Good point out there, Bob. I think that kind of wraps up the big events in the UTA. I'll talk about a future. Again, that's obviously one of the looming topics when it comes to our future of the 442nd Aviation Package. I'll say that this last couple of months are congressional visits. We've already
hosted Congressman Alford's staff. They came out and got 20 minutes with him. It was fast and furious, but I definitely gave them an update of what's going on the wing. We have Senator Hawley's staff coming at the end of June. We have Senator Schmidt's staff coming mid-July, and then Congressman Alford is going to be here himself with the House Armed Services Committee chairman. I believe it's Congressman Lee from Alabama, but I'll have to check that. And he's going to bring him direct to Whiteman, and we're going to have some time with him direct. So a lot of good visits where we're going to make contact with the individuals across the river from the Pentagon and Capitol Hill, make sure they understand where we're at, what's going on. Again, we don't advocate for anything because we'll do whatever the Air Force tells us to do, but we'll definitely tell them where we're at because the members of our wing are their voters, and they are very concerned about our future. So that's awesome that they're coming up here. There's a lot of testimony about the 2025 budget, and it's getting cut up in the Armed Services Committee. So the HASC, House Armed Services Committee, and the SASC, Senate Armed Services Committee, and Representative Alford in the full committee calls us out multiple times, calls the 442nd Wing, hey, I'm concerned about the 442nd Fighter Wing, warriors and members. And if you have a chance to look at that testimony or listen to that testimony, it's on YouTube. It's also on the congressional websites, but it's great to realize that our representative from the 4th District cares about us, and it's on the tip of his tongue what's happened to the 442nd. So
and that, if you're that's like awesome me. Stuff. There's nothing more stimulating than watching C-SPAN reruns.
I'll tell you what, I did fast forward when they were talking about submarines and other systems that were not necessarily Air Force centric, but when I saw anything fighter related and the future of the Air Force Fighter Force, I listened up and there was some really good testimony, and Congressman Alford is 100% aware of what's going on with us and pushing for our future follow-on aircraft. So great stuff, and if you have time to listen to those videos, please do. Okay, yeah, hey, we also have a couple DFTs going on, so deployments for training, I think that's what DFT stands for, bottom line, annual tour, where the MSG has a couple squadrons out. The LRS is in Charleston, which I think is, you know, it's obviously a very large airlift hub, but it's a great town as well, so hopefully they're enjoying themselves. And then the FSS is in Florida, kind of split between two locations. They're integrating with the active duty for training as well. And they're at Eglin and Duke Field, which is funny. Duke Field, when I was going through pilot training, was like this austere base that almost, quote, quote, didn't exist. And you weren't even allowed to go in there. It was like special ops. Now we're sending a services DFT to Duke Field. That's kind of a big change. So, but yeah, I think they're having a good time already and training hard. So that's good stuff. All right, good Bob, deal. Let's wrap it up. You know, I don't know if I've said this on the Hogcast, but I've definitely been saying this out and about. Lead well, train hard, ready now. If you think about those three things when you are out here at work at the 442nd, you're going to be doing the right stuff. So, Bob, let's wrap it up.
All right, let's talk to Bango and Stain.
Great.
Recently returned pilots from Operations Inherent Resolve and Spartan Shield, and they are going to tell us a little bit about their deployments.
Yeah, hey Bob, thanks. Yeah, so we got two pilots. They're both Lobo pilots, so they're our active duty from our TFI relationship that had the awesome opportunity to deploy with the 354th Bulldogs as part of their deployment to CENTCOM between October and March of 23 to 24. And we got Bango here. He went October through January, and we got Stain here, who went December through March. Did they have any other TFI pilots that deployed with you guys, or were you just the, meaning from an, like guest help from another squadron?
No, sir. We were the only that deployed with this, but prior to me deploying, we had another TFI pilot with a 75th.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
So this is a great thing that your squadron commander, USA, Mike Dumas, Lieutenant Colonel type, has set up with the other squadrons that gave you some combat deployment time. That's awesome.
I assume. Is this your first deployment, Vango?
Yes, sir.
Okay, staying yours as well?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, so the deployment time is not as frequent as it used to be, so taking advantage of this opportunity is great. So let's start with Bango. So Bango, you went October through January. What was the biggest thing, and I kind of give you a hard time about you having to leave with about only 2 months' notice in regards to your family?
Yeah, so we had just found out that my wife, Abby, was pregnant with our first child, and it was a volunteer deployment, so that conversation with her was a little bit more hard, you know, to have to tell her, hey, honey, can I go on this deployment? And she looked at me and was like, you want to do what? And I was like, yeah. But she supported me through it all, and I'm grateful for that. And I ended up going, and, you know, looking back, it was a great experience for sure.
Yeah, obviously family support's huge, yeah. And it's difficult to serve if you don't have that family base at home. And luckily, most of the people in our unit have that. And it's easier to say I'm going to combat in the Middle East rather than saying, hey, I'm going to Northern Watch in Italy. If you talk to General Nestor, he'll talk about all his turns in Italy. Those are harder to justify. So you integrated within the 354th Bulldogs, which, by the way, was my first fighter squadron, which is a great historic fighter squadron when it comes to A-10s and deploying. They've done some of the most awesome stuff. I think they were the first to split deployment. They actually deployed and split to Afghanistan and Iraq. So, you know, we're talking about ACE and splitting deployments. That was probably the first A-10 squadron to do that back in probably 2003 or something like that. And you hopped in the squadron and luckily you knew some of the people there. So who did you know and how did you know them?
Yeah, so there was probably at least three guys that I knew from my B course class. So Miss Akins, Panchito Kraus, Roomba was another one. And so being able to know that those guys were going to be downrange with me made, you know, just preparing and knowing that those guys, you know, I trusted them. We had done well together in B course. We loved the A-10, and being able to deploy with them was going to be a great experience.
Yeah, awesome. Hey, was there an officer with the last name of Borgen in that squadron?
There was also, yeah, Smorgasborgen.
Smorgasborgen.
He ended up showing up halfway through, and okay. We were pretty close as well.
Is he a captain or a lieutenant?
He's a captain.
Captain, yeah. Borgen. So yeah. That will bring us some memories. I think the squadron commander's drawer has some stories about Captain Borgen. Granted, it's this Schmorgas, who's Borgen's father, about an incident that occurred at the officers club, which is now the all ranks club here at Whiteman Air Force Base. So that's awesome. So yep. You got to deploy with one of our legendary former wing commander, squadron commander, group commander, officer's son.
Yep.
And good. I heard he's a good dude, and I'm glad you got to get close to him. You went over there as a two ship?
Yes, sir.
Did you start leading right off the bat?
Yeah, my second flight in country, I was lead. I mean, I was a weapons officer, so I had an IP. But yeah, second time in country, was leading there, and definitely felt prepared enough to do that.
Yeah, awesome. And that's one of the things we went to Afghanistan. I was the director of operations. I had a lot of brand new flight leads that, you know, wanted to fly in the wing, and the answer was no. You're going out front. Yeah, maybe we'll give you a more experienced guy on your wing, but getting out front right off the bat kind of makes it real.
Yeah.
And you learn real quick. So sure. That's awesome. And, you know, it's the first time that you're fully loaded up with all the countermeasures, all the weapons, and there's no simulations and a lot of responsibility, even though it's not a super kinetic situation over there. One of the things that I thought was interesting in regards to you and your preparation, you said you felt perfectly prepared in regards to the training you had in our fighter squadron, you know, yes. Reserve component. So any issues with that?
No, just the ability, the BTFI with the 358th and the 303rd allowed opportunities that prepared me adequately to feel like being deployed wasn't, yeah, there was a little nerves, obviously,
sure.
First deployment. But again, with Lieutenant Colonel Dumas and just the 303rd members being able to get me to go different places and allow for me to get outside my comfort zone.
Like, yep.
Yeah, that was a great experience.
Yeah, that's flying away from home base is yeah. A lot different. And that's one of the things that I think you were actually aggressive at and making sure that you were prepared as a fighter pilot. You had a couple TDYs that were not 303rd fighter squadron TDYs, but TDYs that you, again, guest helped for. What were the units and where did you go?
Yeah, so I helped out to the 25th Fighter Squadron out of South Korea.
Pilsung.
Ooh. And we went to Red Flag, Alaska, and supported that large-scale exercise. I also went over to the peninsula and stayed at Osan with the 25th again to support one of their combined force training exercises, which is a full peninsula scale exercise with the ROC and Marines and naval assets. So being able to be a part of all of that and know guys who were in that squadron at that time that I would be deployed with in the Bulldogs.
Yeah.
It was a great experience.
Yeah, awesome. You know, obviously networking within the A-10 enterprise, the A-10 community is huge. What two different locations? You go to Red Flag, Alaska, which is, you know, there's absolutely nothing out there. And then you go to Korea where you can't help but having to dodge a tower because there's so much infrastructure there. It's crazy. And it was the same squadron. Again, that's a hardworking squadron as well. Even they're not as deployed. I was in that squadron as well. So that was my second fighter squadron with my tour in Korea. So that's awesome. But yeah, I think you as a fighter pilot seeking those opportunities, and that goes with any job. You know, if you raise your hand where there's an opportunity to go help a unit that needs some augmentation, you know, volunteer deploy, like our previous war story, Master Sergeant Adam Lambert, he deployed voluntarily. Those are things that get you ready for if something really happens, and obviously prepped you for this volunteer combat deployment to the Middle East. All right, good. I didn't mention that Abigail lets you go in the third trimester, which is pretty bold of both of you. You for asking and her for saying yes, but you know, you're going to be a better fighter pilot. And you know, obviously your wife is strong and handled that. Come back a month later and you had your first child, correct?
Yes. Yeah. So it came back in March 1st, we had Elizabeth. So it was, you know, during the whole deployment, a little bit nerve-wracking and seeing Abby go through just the third trimester and all of the feels of that. But knowing that we could do this apart, and when I got back, it was going to be a great experience
to
be a father.
Yeah, congratulations on that. And that is a huge experience. You've got the fighter pilot curse. Honorance of the daughters. I've got the same. And that's just the way it is. And probably a little bit different to actually be able to like FaceTime and communicate probably every evening with your wife and your baby to be, where, you know, when my first deployment, which was to Southern Watch, I had to get in line. And basically every 3 years, I could spend 10 minutes talking to my wife with a 2 second delay. Very challenging. So things have changed. And what's funny is my neighbor, who father deployed in, I think, Korea. He's an older man. You know, he remembers getting letters. So it's just how things have changed and how deployments are a little bit easier in regards to staying connected at home. So awesome. And thanks to Abigail and congratulations on Elizabeth. That's a great sacrifice that your family did so that you could become a better fighter pilot and serve our nation's needs. Okay. So we're going to shift to Stane and his story before we go into what actually you guys did down there. So Stane, you went from December to March. Again, your first deployment, right?
Yes, sir. I got to go replace Bango so you can get home for the birth. Of my first kid.
Well done.
Thank you, Stane.
And he was kind enough to get me my first flight in theater as well.
No kidding.
Yep. Yes. So Bango on, I think, New Year's Day, gave me my first flight. And that was a great introduction to the AOR.
Yeah, we did like 20 minutes of prep. Hey, tell me some good stories. Give me some data. And this is a great story. So you guys actually did the LAO handoff.
Yeah.
And you flew together. Who led?
Yeah, so I led Stane.
Damn right.
Actually.
Which was awesome. Just knowing each other and with all that, it was a great experience to be able to lead somebody like Stane and teach him the ropes, I guess, before we send him off and let him do his own thing.
So. Yeah, and that's a pretty austere area. Obviously, a lot of it's not very clear in regards to the airspace, I'm assuming, and the coordination that's required to go around. You know, it's probably a mess. Is that a good characteristic?
Yeah, I do think it's, despite being in that same AOR for quite a few years now, there's still more and more rules, and everybody kind of starts over every year. So, unfortunately, there's more goings and comings challenges than there should be, but this doesn't prevent you from doing your job, which is nice.
Okay, awesome. So that was a great PA opportunity to get a photograph of these guys after they're sortie together as the handoff, as Bango gets released to go home to the birth of his first daughter. So went over there December to March. Any issues getting over there or anything like that?
Getting over there is actually pretty simple.
Yep.
Right, hop on a rotator and
Pick
up a couple countries later. Ambien helps a lot. Recommend that.
Ambien.
The biggest challenge, right, is getting into country and plugged into a new unit. Besides dragging all your mobility gear across the world, it's showing up as the new guy, acclimating as soon as you can, figuring out what it is you don't know yet, and then hitting the ground running.
Yeah, also you integrated with a unit that had been there for 3 months, right? At least you went over right away. Did you go Advon, if I recall?
So I ended up about a week after their ADVOC had gotten there. So they were still very much in the setup process.
Where, Stan, you showed up and they're halfway through their deployment. So, but you knew some of the guys, so that helped out?
Yeah, that was pretty helpful. So I was fortunate enough to go through my initial A-10 training with their current DO, soon to be the squadron commander of the Dragons, the initial A-10 active duty squadron. And then I was also a fan of Mr. Younger Borgen, as well as some of the other folks that Bango mentioned earlier who I have crossed paths with and at Davis-Monthan in the past. So it is comforting knowing somebody in the A-10 community, small community, but it's still a daunting task to plug yourself into a high-functioning organization and try and be value-added from day one.
Yeah, so you just kind of sparked a memory. Matt, we actually tried to bring Matt Borgen out here, and kind of true to the Borgen name, he didn't refuse. He said, no, I want to stay with the 47th, the unit that hired me. So he actually made a point not to come out and season with us, but actually season with the Bulldogs and the Enterprise there in Tucson. So yeah, glad you got to meet him. And yeah, absolutely. Walking into a unit and knowing somebody just makes a big difference. So, okay. Anything of note about you guys getting over there and prepping? You went over as a 2-ship or a 4-ship?
Left as a young instructor pilot.
Well, I'm way off here. Sorry, Stan. Slap me.
It's okay, sir.
It's getting old. I'd slap you, but I can't reach him old.
It's challenging to acclimate to what's a new kind of war, different than what we usually practice day to day here. So how do you think about some new problems that you probably haven't encountered yet that you might? And I had a couple more months than Bango to think those things through and try and show up as prepared as possible.
And you talk about 2 months kind of being short. The unit that went over there had 10 days when they, I think it was the 75th.
That's correct.
75th, 10 days notice.
Last couple weeks in their bucket and you're about to be out of your deploy window and hey, you're going now.
Yeah. And you know, we have a doc statement that makes us go out the door even quicker than the 10 days. So that could have a huge impact on us and our families if that ever happens. So again, prep makes it a little bit easier to get over there. Okay, so Bango, you said you were a straight line pilot, but you were an IP. Thanks for that correction. Did you do any IP duties over there?
Not too much in the OIR side of the house. When they were in the southern side of the Arabian Peninsula, there were some opportunities for some training with some partner countries.
Okay.
They called it PNI, so that's building partner capacity, right? Making these friends of ours a little better at all things airplanes. So that allowed me to do some 2-ship upgrades for some of their younger Bulldogs and some others who were going either to stay in the A-10 or go to the F-35 as they rapidly closed down the Bulldogs this summer.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's happening right now, which is a sad, sad day for our community, that's for sure. And Bango, you were actually on the A-staff, which they actually executed. So why don't you explain what you did over there on the ground?
Yeah, so just trying to get into anything that I could. The commander, Meet Chapman, of the Bulldogs at the time said, hey, you know, we've got this position for you. It's relatively new. This was going to be the first iteration of the air staff or A staff in this construct 24.1. So I got tasked to be the A33, current operations division chief, basically an assistant to the A3, the operations chief at the base that we were stationed. So with that came just tasks to make sure all the operations on the airbase from the ATO, basically all that went through the A3 back to the wing commander, just so he knew what was going on in country. So I'd help out, again, Stan alluded to the PNI. We would prepare exercises and go through the needs of those, plan them, execute them, and provide after-action reports for CENTCOM and AFSENT. So it was a great experience on a staff level, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't what I expected.
Watch your mouth there.
Again, it wasn't what I expected. Now, you know, being able to do that, I'm grateful for just the opportunity. But yeah, it was a staff job, and it had benefits in different ways, for sure.
Well, good. Yeah, that's interesting. The A33 is what you called yourself. So, yeah, the A staff is very elaborate, and, you know, that's coming, and we're going to probably get that running here in the next year or so in our wing. It's difficult because we don't have a lot of bodies, so we'll see how we integrate that. Maybe I'll bring you on as an initial consultant, Bango, since you're actually on an air staff. All right, so what was the base like, guys? You said, I mean, you went to Al-Dhafer. We could talk about that. Stan, you said it wasn't that good. Why don't you explain what you're talking about?
I think potential to be quite hot there.
Okay, imagine that. Middle East hot.
Middle East hot. especially in the summertime.
But you were there in the winter.
You know, it's still hot. So I would say the base infrastructure is pretty established. Had fighters there for a long time. There's a pretty big gap before the Bulldogs were there. Been a long time since there have been fighters. So there's some challenges of working through reintegrating that, whether that's airspace, maintenance, local, country, nationals that had some challenges of working through that. But it's a very established base, talking 3 beers a day.
Oh, it's the standard in the Middle East. You got your American compound.
American compound, usually the initial part, because people could not travel off base. By the end, I think the rules had changed. You go off base and grab dinner.
Okay.
Locals, but you got a base pool.
Gross.
Enough gyms. Yeah, don't go in the pool, but it's available to you. Bingo night.
Yeah, the USO and all the stuff.
Pretty established. A couple hailstorms that are a problem. But
no kidding.
Yes, sir.
Hail in UAE. That's crazy. Yep. I thought that was a Missouri thing. So what was the beer of choice over there? Was it still Franck's?
Whatever the highest.
Yeah, that's Franck's. It's a Russian beer peripheral. Yeah. Maybe it wasn't.
We had a German option, but it was
A German beer. Yeah, so things don't change that much there. So that's good.
No,
did you have to get swiped on your ID to get your 3 beers?
Every
or did
time?
It?
Yep.
No kidding. Yeah. They don't trust us.
It's weird.
So, okay, well, awesome. So, standard Air Force Base food.
DFAC, life is simple, right?
Yeah.
Go to work, go to the gym.
Yep. I wish you could compare, you know, like the food I got in 2006. It's pretty much the same food I had 2014, you know, Halliburton, DFAC, all at Bagram, you know, the cookies are the same, which are addictive, by the way. But yeah, isn't it crazy? I wonder if it was the same food that we had in Afghanistan, same contractor more than likely. So got to go down a couple times. You actually had a pretty cool experience to get to go downtown Bangor. You went to the air show. So why don't you talk about that?
Yeah, so just being on A-Staff, we supported the Dubai International Air Show, which is one of the biggest air and trade shows in the world.
Probably so, yeah.
And it's not so much there's airplanes that fly around from a multitude of different countries, from Russia to China. And we were there to support the Americans with an A-10 static display. And so being able to do that, I got to talk to a bunch of different country, you know, ministers and
trying to buy the A-10.
Yeah, they tried to buy the A-10. But, you know,
sold
you've
it.
Got large. I mean, who knows? But
sold it and fly off with it. Unless it's just a little corruption.
Yeah, yeah.
Fraud.
But it was funny. I'd say something that we didn't talk about, but I think the defense minister of Bosnia came up to me and with a very well-known rap sheet of what the A-10 did there. And he was very happy to see the A-10, which was very cool. But, you know, stuff like that at the air show was unique, a unique experience for me, never having been to Dubai and experienced such a wonderful city like that, an oasis in the desert, but also do the air show, which supported, I think, over $150 billion worth of American defense corporation sales for, you know, Boeing, Lockheed, Raytheon, all that stuff like that.
So. Yeah, that's awesome. And, you know, the fact that you had someone that came up to actually look at the A-10 reminds me of a story. We had a Polish general in Bagram one day insist on coming and seeing the A-10. And he came in. I said, well, how do you want to see the A-10? At this point, he's NATO. They said, well, back before we were NATO, I lost so much sleep as a lieutenant worrying about this airplane as a Warsaw Pact lieutenant. So it's just crazy that the airplane is regarded so highly in other countries, I guess. I mean, it's obviously regarded highly here, even though they're phasing it out. But that's awesome. That's awesome. Were you able to jump around and check out any of the non-US aircraft and climb up and in?
Yeah,
anything
there,
cool?
There was, it wasn't called an air tractor, but it was the UAE variant of their air-to-ground platform, which was pretty kitted up. They had some UAE Defense Corporation that had provided a lot of the, I guess, munitions and, you know, different things that you saw on the airplane. But it was a two-seater with a weapon system officer in the back seat. And that was a really cool to be able to talk to the pilots of that, who was equivalent to their weapons officer over there. And they had Apaches as well, you know, at least on the Emirati side. And then, you know, the Russians and the Chinese were there as well with some of their assets. But the Emiratis, that was pretty cool to
Were you
to hang
like
out
briefed
them.
Not to go hang out with the Chinese and Russians?
No, I mean, we
just
were,
common sense.
No, it's just, you know, we just kind of hung out and didn't do too much. But the Emirati side was really cool. They were very nice and accommodating. Yeah. Came up to our jets.
So was it a 1 day air show, 2 day air show?
It was a full week.
Full week. Nothing like selling airplanes in the desert, right? That's awesome. That sounds like a great experience and stuff like that. How did you get picked for that?
Yeah, so again, like I said, being on A-Staff, I kind of weasel my way into
called,
that.
That's called corruption.
Yeah, and yes. I had my good buddy, Miss Akins. he got tapped to be the POC from the Bulldogs. And I was like, hey, Mist, you want to take me with you?
Yeah, so, we see that in the scheduling shop sometimes, you know.
Yeah, it worked out for me. I think the other Bulldog pilots were like, what, Bango's getting the go on this?
Sorry,
I
was
like,
doesn't matter. Guys.
But it worked out.
So. Yeah, good. That sounds awesome. Yeah. All right, so talked about the base, talked about some different stuff you did. Let's talk about the mission. You know, you guys said, hey, it wasn't that busy and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But I remember my first combat deployment was Southern Watch, completely non-kinetic. But I was a super brand new wingman, and the first time I take off as a CMR pilot was in Kuwait, and I've got a full rack of bombs, chaff flare, a couple AIM 9s, you know, we didn't have SATCOM, but a full C2 integration just to get into Iraq and do, you know, what's that stuff called? Not peacekeeping, but no-fly zone. And it gets serious. You realize that you're not going over to Cannon Range anymore or Truman Charlie Dry. You know, there's just responsibilities because you got real stuff on the jet and you're in real unfamiliar airspace. So I know you guys didn't have a really kinetic deployment, but it's obviously a combat deployment. So why don't you talk to me, Stane, you talked how you said force protection was the job. So why don't you talk pretty much what the standard mission was over there?
Yes, sir. So for the OIR side of that deployment, the force protection, so keeping the folks on the ground safe, pretty A-10 standard there. So for us, there's some Americans and coalition partners spread out across Iraq and Syria who are, I would say, in harm's way all the time.
Okay.
They're in threat ranges. They're, I would argue, surrounded by people who don't have the same interests as us, same people who are causing trouble in that same countries for a long time now.
Sure.
So they're...
Definitely open borders, right?
Open borders. Yeah. You know, people who are friends with our enemies, people who are not who they say they are. So whether that's the IED threat has kind of subsided, the new threats are drone-based. This is one-way attack drones were, I would say, the new MO of some of our enemies there.
Yeah, we obviously saw that, you know, about a month ago with the attack from Iran onto Israel. And when did the attack of, was it, Tower 22 occur?
Yes,
was that
sir.
When you were there, Stane?
Yes, sir. So the Tower 22 attack where three Americans were killed, three Army reservists.
Army reservists,
from
absolutely.
Georgia, who were all engineer backgrounds. They were killed in early January. And that's a pretty tough pill to swallow, right? That's everybody's angry, everybody's sad. There are, you know, 40 plus other casualties as well.
Yeah.
Multiple CASAVACs. You know, we did respond with our flexible response options. Our time of our choosing, I think, was the expression that our leadership used.
And yeah, that strike, that was the Bulldogs that did that.
You weren't
on it?
We were involved. Okay. You know, we do strive to involve lots of assets and other coalition countries every time we can, just to build the ability to work together and show them that you're not just going to fight us, you're going to fight us and all of our friends, and you should probably think twice before we do that again. But in general, we were fairly defensive-minded, in my opinion. So we're protecting the folks on the ground. That's convoy escorts, people driving through Indian country. That's protecting little fobs and bases out there that are, again, just sitting there doing their best to do their job, but they're Americans in harm's way, and they're, because they're sitting back on defense, we're kind of waiting to react to something. So, but whenever NATAN was overhead, whether that was a low altitude show of force or within audible range, or they know we're there, that tended to persuade them not to attack the friendlies on the ground.
Yep, awesome. You know, obviously, you did that. You did that specifically with convoy support. Bango, you talked about one convoy you helped move, and it was huge. You said it was a big convoy.
Yeah, so it was a resupply convoy, maybe 50 trucks, but it didn't have very many other assets supporting it at that time.
Yeah.
So, you know, being the XCAS or just close air support for those guys on the ground was a great experience for me. Two young flight leads going out there together. So me and Pero, and we supported these guys for 4 hours and just provided some morale boost for them with a show of force, you know, to some of the Army guys who were involved with that.
Yeah.
So that was a good experience.
Did you ever have XCAS falls that didn't have a specific tasking that you're just up there working with the JTAC?
Yeah, there was a few
of those. So Bango, you said you flew about twice a week, same with you, Stane, and you got how many sorties did you get?
Yeah, so in about 3 months, I got 20 sorties,
okay.
100 combat hours.
Cool, 100 combat hours. That's a, you know, kind of a big mark.
Yeah.
You know, that's pretty cool. What about you, Stane?
I had a pretty similar kind of pace. And then Bango did a lot of mission planning, cell duties, making all those products work for us. And I did a lot of sitting at the operations desk, keeping it running. So, you know, even though you weren't going to be on the flying schedule every day, there was still something you were doing every day to help those who were.
You guys did some split ops. We can't specifically talk about where that one went, but did the squadron split like 50-50, or did you just run like a debt And what challenges did that bring?
Yeah, so it was more like a debt, but the majority was, you know, we were supporting, you know, different things, P&I with okay. a debt. And I'd say the biggest thing that, whether it was the maintenance or having all of the assets that a normal squadron needs to run, like mission planning computers yeah. and all that, I mean, they were decently prepared, but they were not expecting that this was going to happen. So that the pains of that when it first occurred definitely shone through, you know, just the operational yeah. task of moving airplanes to a place where we had never operated out of before, and then leaving, you know, some people behind to support that. You know, when you split up a whole squadron, that decently hard.
Yeah, it's absolutely hard. And you got to make crap up
yeah.
and to make it happen and be an enabler rather than a, hey, I'm not resourced. We'll figure it out.
Definitely. People have to step up to the plate for sure.
Yeah. Good stuff. That's ace. You know, yeah. it's like, what is ace? It's doing that stuff like that.
Yeah.
And there's no book. There's no UTC. You know, it's just kind of making things happen and using your intuition, you know, just using your brains to make stuff happen and enable pretty much easier with the A-10. Because we can go to places that a lot of the other airplanes can't, and we really don't need computers to run the jet. I mean, we can
yeah.
start. We don't have to do mission plan. We could plug it in manually. So I think we are one of those airplanes that the Air Force is forgetting is we're the definition of ace. And just think of our minds as CAS pilots. Every engagement's different. You got to think, problem solve. You know, those things that we train to in the air completely transition to what we'd have to do on the ground. So
sure.
I think we are the benchmark of ace splitting up. And I think you guys said that you appreciated our maintenance a little bit, not to throw shade on any unit. Cause I know they attend as an enterprise is in, you know, parts and it's just a difficult airplane is older, but you definitely appreciate our maintenance and specifically the mods.
Yeah. Seeing the jets we fly here, obviously they're maintained at a level I think everybody respects around here. We certainly appreciate the, whenever we take a jet for a couple hours, that we're provided the best ability to do our jobs as we can. So the ones downrange were active duty jets. We were there for those. That's the biggest change would be the lack of the mods that's been happening. So the 3D audio might sound inconsequential, but allows you to hear more radios at the same time. It really does work.
Yep.
The second R210, pretty huge deal.
It's a huge deal.
The jammers and GPS, pretty huge deal. Lets you know whenever you're getting jammed, which happened a lot. So I do think that maybe some of those things you maybe don't see when you're flying around Missouri, you don't appreciate them, but those really do provide some kind of capability that you probably take for granted if you're just turning wrenches in the hot summer night.
Yeah, awesome. So, you know, throw props to our maintenance again. And it's not just this year. This is kind of an enterprise that's been operating here at Whiteman for a long time, and it shows. Yeah, the jam-resistant GPS is an enabler. You know, they're jamming bombs in Ukraine right now, and they're missing. So, you know, our JDAM's missing, which blows my mind. Awesome. So the mods, appreciate our maintenance. A couple neat missions, specifically Bango. You said you actually did a counterfact FIAC mission. There's another acronym that I don't know, but anti-boat.
It's called AOMSW.
Which is anti-boat.
Long. Yeah, I mean, that's what it is. So, you know, supporting counter FAC and FIAC fast boats moving through the Strait of Hormuz to against, I guess, American flag vessels. You know, Iran has an interest to potentially board them. So we, you know, provided support in and around the Strait again for naval assets, Coast Guard assets, you know, maritime vessels, and that was a pretty cool.
That gets pretty narrow, correct? How wide is it? Yeah. About a 20-mile gap?
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure. I know that I could see into Iran.
You could see into Iran.
Yeah,
so. were you in threat rings known to Iran that were off, or what was the deal with that?
Yeah, so, you know, flying that far north, for sure we were in threat rings known to Iran, and we fly in international airspace and, you know, be called out by Iran on guard, telling us to maneuver our course away from their international zone. But again, that mission set was basically deterrence and presence for those boats going through that narrow
30-mile gap.
So, yeah, absolutely. So obviously a huge threat looking into Iran, which is interesting, getting yelled at Iran, but by Iran on guard. How close did you get to their international line?
Yeah, so we never went over, I think it was a black line.
Which was a buffer, I assume.
Definitely a buffer, right along what we recognize as their international boundary.
Okay. So a couple miles or so.
Yeah, I mean, a few miles.
Okay, cool. Yeah, that's a different mission for sure. You guys, initially, the unit was using our Sergeant Fletcher tanks, correct?
Yeah, so we would go up to those locations with those Sergeant Fletchers.
Okay, you're talking the Strait or these contingency locations?
The Strait.
Okay.
When we first got there, it was
And obviously sure. totally enabled. And that's something that we've let other units borrow, but it's a complete force enabler, combat enabler that our unit was real smart at gathering up. I'll say Rags was the one that actually scored these from Grissom, and I think he got some from Alaska, and he just kind of gathered them all here. He probably didn't realize, but they ended up being this, you know, they're gold. And everybody wants them, but they ended up stop using them because of why they broke, right?
Yeah, it was. I mean, it's a pretty intensive process to keep the Fletchers working appropriately when they do go wrong.
Yeah, especially you don't know them, you know.
Yeah, and they weren't very familiar, but yeah, there was a few times where there was issues. So.
Yeah, I know that other units are going to try to use them, but yeah, they're an incredible asset that we have.
So, as someone who is neither a pilot,
oh, or sorry,
a crew chief, what is a Sergeant Fletcher?
Yeah, so a Sergeant Fletcher is a fuel tank that we're able to carry on the airplane and hold an extra 4,000 pounds of fuel, which enables us to fly longer and do certain things, you know, appropriately. The biggest thing about the Sergeant Fletcher is it's not as bulky as the other fuel tanks that we can carry. We can maneuver appropriately with that Sergeant Fletcher and pull Gs at different rates versus another, you know, gas.
Yeah, 600 extra gallons. It's a combat fuel tank versus a ferry tank that the other units have. Ferry as in, you know, traveling with only. So
that's why everybody wants them.
Everybody wants them.
And we have them.
Yep, we have them.
That
absolutely. Good. Thanks, Bob. Yeah, we just assumed. But yeah, they're so the combat fuel tanks that only Whiteman has. Actually, the guard units are starting to score newer ones, but we've had them for decades and other units have them. Stan, you got to drop a bomb for the first time in the A-10. Why don't you talk through that?
Yeah, I was lucky enough to help investigate an anomaly we had in our software. So on a training mission, we were able to drop some SDBs and JDAMs, as well as some gun nature.
So again, for small diameter bombs.
Yeah, small diameter bombs and then 500-pound GPS bombs plus gun and rockets. So that's a pretty fun day when most of your days are washing things in your targeting pod, getting the drop and shoot is a pretty good deal, much like Bango's air show out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Got a good deal, go drop.
The corruption air show, we'll call it.
Yes, sir. The weapons worked flawlessly, which is pretty cool. The small diameter bomb is fairly new to the A-10.
It is.
In the last year or so. So neat to see that work as advertised. And then we get to help kind of nail down what the anomaly was. Now we have a way forward for that as well. So pretty neat day to go out and do that. I think that was the first A-10 SDB in the Middle East.
Good. And Stan was the first pickler.
Yeah, and awesome. Worked as advertised.
There you go. Awesome. How'd you score that sortie?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Probably corruption.
Corruption.
That was a few days after I left, so obviously, you know, good deals all around for staying.
Awesome. Good. Why don't you talk about Liz Sutton's son?
Yeah, so Liz is a GS employee in the wing here.
Yep, she's the Fighter Squadron's deployment manager, UDM.
Yep, and she helped us get out the door as well, along with our other active duty UDMs that we have here. And her son is Special Forces JTAC, who we actually saw last week here locally for training. And they had just gotten back from the Middle East. One of my earlier sorties there was able to talk to him on the radio and do some of that same force protection kind of thing for him while he and his unit were in Syria. So it's a pretty crazy small world. You hear a voice you recognize, and you get a signal number, and you see an area code that starts with 660, and you start to connect who's who.
That is crazy.
Yes, it's a crazy small world in the A-10 CAS business.
You know, Liz has enabled our unit for a long time. You know, I remember I met her when she was actually still a master sergeant. She's retired now. I know Liz and Ed very well. And I'm going to throw Spencer under the bus because Liz always had to take sick leave because Spencer was sick during high school and stuff like that. Obviously, things change, and Spencer's now a badass JTAC deployed to the Middle East.
Sick in quotations.
Oh, no, I think he was sick all the time. I don't think Liz was making it up. I think he was a sickly child. Yeah. It obviously got him prepped for special forces duties. So that's awesome. And yeah, I was lucky to meet him as well the other week. And yeah, he is an impressive JTAC and quite the impressive airman. Humble Liz, never talks about him, or rarely talks about him. And I didn't process how sickly Spencer is now a badass JTAC. So he'll probably come kick my ass next. Okay, awesome. So force protection was a job. Great deployment, guys. And staying, I'm going to kind of wrap it up. Why we're there. You know, hey, if you're an enemy, this is a quote from you, you better think twice if you want to fight us and our friends. So, you know, hopefully that's kind of what we're doing in the South China's, or the, you know, the great power competition. You know, we're prepping for our worst case enemy, which is China. I don't want to fight that war because they're going to hit us here as well at home. So, you know, hopefully that's why we're readdressing, revectoring our entire military and our entire DOD. So people think twice if you want to fight us and our friends. So I think that was a good summary. And I wrote that down, and I write that down in my smart book because it's a good quote. So, all right, Stain, man, thanks. Bango, thanks. Guys, thanks for setting your time up and telling what you guys did. It's a great story. And, you know, anytime we can talk to guys that went downrange and supported the combat mission of our country is good stuff. So.